food.
KPCW News Time now, 8:14. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour. Stay tuned. Coming up for the final Utah Politics Now, Renee Bodley and I between 10 and 11. We'll be talking with Mark Thomas. He's the State Director of Elections. We'll be taking a look at just how well mail-in balloting went this year. And then later, we'll be talking with Morgan Lynn Cotty. She's the Hinckley Institute of Politics Director, along with Brian Schott from UtahPolicy.com. Also on the phone with us, we'll have Carol McNamara. She's director of Olin S. Walker Institute of Politics and Public Policy. We'll be breaking down those state election results, so hope you'll stay tuned for that. First, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and in the studio with an update, I have Councilmember Talladega. Good morning, Tal.
Good morning.
First, let's just, can we get your reaction to the election results? I know it's certainly not what you had hoped for.
Oh, yes, but that's the process. One of the good things is that talking to Kent Jones yesterday is that we'll probably have around 85% voter turnout, which is just a phenomenal thing. So it's kudos to the KPCW and everybody here to getting the word out and getting people out to vote.
Yeah, so with an 85% turnout, that would be record number. We already hit the 78 as of election night. But then given that, with the population base in the Snyderville Basin, how difficult is it then for a person on the east side to win anymore? We know that your opponent, Doug Clyde, who was not running against you, has a lot of support from the western Summit County area.
Yeah, he does. And also there's a lot of the Democratic side is over on the west side. And so we understand that demographics. That's just how it always is. And so now every elected official in Summit County will be from the Democratic Party.
And how do you feel about that?
I mean, there's always balance. I mean, everybody, even in state government, we all know that there's maybe a little bit of imbalance down at the legislature. And so, you know, the same thing happens here. It's always good to have a different point of view and to be able to talk and debate about issues and coming up what's best for the county. So,
do you think your Republican background, though, made a difference on the county council?
I think so. I mean, also, you know, Dave, you're sat on the council. It's just a differencing of opinion. And a lot of the time, the council members actually turn to, you know, a more conservative, and you just talk about it and you get a different perspective. It's just good business in anything you have. I mean, businesses look at, surround yourself with good people, not that you know everything. You just may have a different perspective, you know, from the business standpoint.
Yeah. Still, again, with Doug Clyde, a longtime resident of the South Summit area, do you think he'll do a good job, though, representing kind of that side of the county's views, even though he is a Democrat?
I certainly hope so. I mean, he'll have the ears of the east side. You know, he has a different perspective, you know, working a lot here on the west side. But, you know, as citizens, we'll have his ear and we'll be able to tell him how we feel and represent. So, you know, I certainly hope he does and reaches out to maybe some more of the agriculture and the longtime residents and the, you know, those that have history in Summit County to maybe get a different perspective from that point.
Let's talk briefly about the transit sales tax increases that passed successfully. Any in particular transit projects that South Summit area would like to see? You know, we spoke with Sue Pollard on election night, and she was basically saying, you know, this isn't going to help people living on the east or south side of the, or north or south side of the county.
You know, we have to, on the east side, work with the council in bringing together so that those priorities that affect the east side are up on that list. So there's going to be a committee that looks at all of the needs of the county. And so residents just need to get involved and be on that committee so that as issues come up, like a bus line or park and rides or whatever, that they're up on that priority list so that tax is spread out throughout the county fairly, and it's just not one side or the other.
Yeah, when we talk about $8.2 million those taxes are going to raise, $250,000 per community doesn't sound like a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money. And again, working together with the mayors and COG and getting so that, you know, that money is increased over time as the county grows and as the needs of the county. So maybe we focus on Park City and the Kimball Junction area and solve those problems, but not forget that there's also needs on the east, south, north side. So, You know, you don't forget that Colville's there and they're going to have needs, and Francis is going to have needs, and Woodlands is going to have needs, and we'll bring all that to the forefront. So,
the North Summit Recreation District, also the proposal there got shot down, a property tax increase, as County Manager Tom Fisher mentioned. Will this affect the council's decision about the fairgrounds, because North Summit Recreation will now not be a funding source for that?
Yeah, I mean, money doesn't grow on trees. I mean, the county isn't any different than our own household budgets and incomes. You know, we'd all like a new car and whatever, but can we afford it? So we have to look at where the money is going to come from, and maybe it's just a timing issue. Maybe not now, but it will be in the future. The long-term master plan was presented to the council. It was just that. It was a master plan, and maybe we scale it back a little bit until we have the funds necessary to build those. You know, don't go into debt unless you can afford that debt.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, if there's not buy-in from the local community, I mean, why should we, as the entire county, support those efforts?
Exactly. So, again, it may not happen today. It may not happen in the timeline that we wanted it, but it's just that. It's a master plan. Maybe it's built in 10 years. Maybe it's not built at all, but working with the local community and what's right for the county as a whole. So the local residents didn't want the fairgrounds to be outside the city of Colville either. So the council heard that and said, okay, let's find a happy medium. So, you know, do we go back to the drawing board? Do we just kind of fine-tune the fairgrounds as they are so that we can improve the fair and make it local for the locals there? So we'll have to maybe just look at how we go about it and find the best plan for all of Summit County.
Anything you hope to see completed by the time your term ends at the end of the year?
Yeah, well, we're going through the budget process, which is the bulk of the council's business. So there's just going to be a lot of, regular stuff that we do. I'd like to see maybe some of the eastern planning and zoning issues maybe come up, chapters 3 and 4, but I don't know that we'll see that before middle of December when the council convenes for the holidays.
Yeah, and real quick, back to the transit projects. I had wanted to ask you: are there any specific transit projects that South Summit does want to see?
I mean, we all look at the traffic that comes into Park City. I think a bus line, and not just one bus a day, but maybe two or three, so that people can come and go at convenience. You know, we have to make it convenient, or people won't ride it. So I'd really like to see a bus and a park and ride that people can maybe alleviate some of the traffic as they come into town and be able to get back. Or if our kids are coming in, or, you know, for example, Sundance, it would be nice to ride the bus in here and not bring our cars and still be able to experience Sundance and the movies and what goes on during Sundance or other activities. So if we could move that up on the priority list so that we can minimize our car load here in the city would be probably a good idea.
So that would be based out of Camas then? Is that?
It makes sense if that's the reasonable thing. I'd also maybe like to see that $250,000 increase so that we can help those mayors. I mean, my city of Francis, I have a huge pothole just out in the front of my home. It's just because the city can't afford right now to repair those roads. So maybe we enlarge that money so that the cities can do something quicker.
On the council agenda, you got an introduction yesterday to the request from Woodward Gorgoza. This is for a height exception to allow a building up to 45 and a half feet rather than the 32 feet that's allowed. You saw some videos on the typical activities that would take place, the topography of the site. So are you leaning to any opinion about whether or not to allow that exception?
I mean, yesterday was a good opportunities to actually see the whole project. I mean, we're a resort community that really focuses on the skiing. That's a really good training facility for our youth and keep them, you know, doing what they do. So I think the idea is good and that it would really help our community. I drove by there this morning and kind of looked at where the building would be. Maybe there is some concern of the residents as, you know, for views and things of that sort. But as we look at it, I think that it would be, if you look at the whole project at the whole, the sledding hill, the building where that would be the footprint, but they also have some cabins and a bigger project than just that. So I think it may be a good idea as we hear public comment and see how it would affect the residents. But it was a spectacular presentation. It was really thought out. They're really concerned with the environment and how if they'd put it deeper, how that may affect the groundwater, which we're all concerned with groundwater and how that the water is distributed. So it would, if we had to go deeper, it may cause something for the vegetation and may not be a good thing environmentally. So I think all around it was a great presentation.
Yeah, any further information you think you need to make a decision?
I think just a little bit of public comment and see how the residents see, but I think it's a good footprint for the community.
All right, you also heard the results from the mental health assessment survey that was done. The survey looked at items like, do people know where to go for help, or are there providers available in Summit County? So do you feel like those are issues for the folks that, you know, in your communities there on the south side?
Absolutely. I mean, mental health is sometimes has a stigma behind it, and mental health is everything from maybe a concussion or, you know, anything that we have in our families or whatever. So it affects us, and sometimes we don't want to recognize that. But mental health is really important in all of our communities, and that's what the survey really tried to get a feeling of: Colville, North Summit, South Summit, and also Park City and the Kimball Junction area.
Yep. So can the court system do more to help those with substance abuse problems?
I think so. Judge Kerr was in the audience and gave a great perspective. You know, our drug court has done really well in helping that part, and she brought up a great idea where maybe we use something of the same footprint where it would, a mental court where we can work with individuals with mental illness and get them the help that they need in the criminal justice system. So I think it's a good footprint. It was amazing on how many people were involved in this survey and making sure that it gave us a really good idea of what really is out there. And the courts, the sheriff's department, the health department, we're all working together to get us where we need to go from here.
So do these results of the survey change anything that's being proposed in the budget for the health department?
Not at this point. I think it's a good idea. You know, the health department is really taking a leap and going forward. They're going to really start looking at what we do next. You know, this isn't just a survey of a one time. It actually gives direction of what we should do and where we should go, and it's just one step in many parts of a pieces of the puzzle.
Okay. Tal, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to thank everybody for getting out to vote and being part of the process. Now's the time to pull together. We're a great community. We have a lot of differencing of opinion. That's what makes us great. Let's just keep moving together and pulling together how we always do, both nationally and here locally.
So you'll stay on then as chair of the Republican Party then?
For the near future, yes.
Okay. Cal, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, good morning. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Planning Commission met once again with the Treasure Hill applicants to view their 3D sketch and how that relates to building mass, design, and the site impacts. In the studio to tell us more about last night's meeting, Planning Commissioner Steve Joyce. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So a big deal was made out of this 3D sketch for the Treasure Project. Really just amounted, though, to a grayscale with the surrounding homes. Did you find it helpful?
Well, actually, the interesting thing is it is helpful, and it was pretty interesting to see. It's a pretty sophisticated tool where it makes it really easy in three dimensions to switch between the what they call the Woodruff drawings, which were the drawings that accompanied the 1986 approval. Compare those to the current proposal And then you can do things like we've had a lot of questions about excavation and, you know, the cliffscapes and things like that that they're doing. You can just kind of flip, literally look what's underground, what's above ground, where the current line of the topology goes, and then what it would be as, you know, after all the work is done, the finished grade. And being able to just switch from one to another is really helpful to us. The one thing we didn't get, though, is it actually didn't have the surrounding houses. And that, they said, was... just because of the size of that project and the scale of it, it would be really difficult to do. So they're actually going to bring us something even better to help us with kind of judging how it fits in the community.
Is this technology to include some kind of video that would allow the model, the 3D model, to be inserted?
Yeah, instead of being kind of a block model, which is more the SketchUp kind of thing, it's really more of what you would see. It's more of a true kind of video projection of what you would see walking down the street.
Yeah, planner Francisco Astorga had said that the elevations in the Woodruff plan do match the current treasure plan, and they also match what he called the cross-section of the site plan. And noted that these were included as part of the first sheet of the master plan from 1986, which says that these following 30 sheets are part of the permitted approval. So what does that mean?
Yeah, that's one that we kind of you sure wish you could be going back in time and have the detailed minutes of all the meetings and everything that went. But that just didn't happen back in 85, 86. The debate is how important are the Woodruff drawings to being specific about what can and can't be built. And so they're certainly not just kind of a, hey, here's a little sketch we did, because they are part of the master plan that was agreed to with the Sweeneys. But they're not finished drawings. They don't show excavations. They don't show any of the things that you would expect from a big facility like that, like any outdoor plazas and things like that. So they're kind of a nice base for us to work on as to what the city council approved, but they're certainly not any kind of finished proposal or anything that you can work from.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about excavation. And it's like, I guess the term's natural grade. When we think about natural grade, you would just say what's out there.
Yeah.
The developers are taking it just a little bit further, saying, well, we can create a new natural grade. Is that the idea?
Well, no, the idea is that there's a lot of measurements of height restrictions that are tied to the natural grade. So in other words, you've got the grade. If you walked outside and looked up the hill right now, which we can actually nicely see from here, you would see what they're calling the natural grade, what's defined that way. What they're talking about is... they can basically cut out, excavate into the hillside and dig deeper and dig back. And part of what that does is kind of set the development back into the hillside a little bit more, with the intent of making it not as visible, you know, standing out, you know, gleaming on a hillside kind of thing. The downside of that is the height restrictions don't have the same effect, because if you think about it, if you said I can build 50 feet above the ground, but then I dug 50 feet down, now I can build a 100-foot building, and I haven't violated building 50 feet above the natural grade, which was the grade that was there before. And so their excavation does a lot of digging. The proposed excavation does a lot of digging. And as a result of that, they do two things, one good and one not necessarily good. They set it back into the hill more, less visible. But as an effect of that, they're able to build much bigger buildings than I think were originally agreed to.
Yeah, and that was something that Planner Astorga gave a very brief presentation. And it included photos with people and cars standing in front of that main building, which towered over that person inserted in the picture. So when we were visualizing this, I mean, is that what we had visualized?
Yeah, if you go back and look at everything from 1986, including these Woodruff drawings, these were big buildings. I mean, so there was no question about, you know, was this going to be a little, you know, artsy cottage community up on the hillside or anything. The Woodruff drawings that are part of the proposal show some pretty large buildings right there where we're, you know, anticipating a proposed development.
So, and that was something the applicant, Pat Sweeney, had done, was compare the amount of excavation to that Woodruff plan. So they are...
Excavation-wise, there's a lot more excavation in the proposed plan, and part of that is The applicant's answer to that is, yes, there is more excavation. There was a bunch. There's even a bunch more. But to really have all the detailed things that you need in a real plan that weren't part of these Woodruff sketches, you need to have a fire plan so that you can get fire trucks around all these buildings and be able to access everything. You need to have the things we talked about, like pools and plazas and stuff like that, that there's no way you could have a hotel without. And so once they put all of that in, their answer is it required a lot more excavation to make reasonable.
One of the planning commissioners commented that when they give direction to other applicants, the applicant usually comes back with a kind of different or adjusted plan showing the changes that the commissioner suggested. But we're not seeing that with Treasure. Why not?
We actually saw the first piece of that where they actually popped up something in the 3D sketch that said, if this was really your concern, here's some way we could maybe make it a little different. And we didn't spend a lot of time on that because it was just kind of right at the end. But part of it, I think, is just the history. I mean, this is a really big project. It's been through a lot of stuff back in kind of 2004, 2005. Then it went through a lot of stuff back in 2009. It's never really gotten to a point where there's been a vote by the commission or anything. And so I think part of it is, rather than start getting in and just unraveling the plans, the applicant's view is, look, we've done a lot of this. We've worked with a lot of planning commissioners and city council members and that kind of thing. This plan is really well thought out. We want you to go through it. And so I think they're being a little hesitant to just start kind of unraveling it again. And at the same time, I think the planning commissioner, it was Melissa Band, who had a comment that, you know, gee, we're pointing out a lot of things that we think aren't consistent with the agreed to master plan, and you're not responding with an alternative. Do you think we're wrong, or are you just, you know, kind of mired into it with what you have, or what? And I think the answer is, we saw the first little bit of, hey, maybe we're willing to consider some other things, or at least bring some other proposals. But time will tell.
All right. So what happens from here?
We still have, I guess, the next thing kind of forks a little bit. We have a lot of things about mitigation of excavation. We've been going through how much is there, how does the size and scaling and mass all fit into the hill, and what excavation would be required. The next wave is kind of, how does all of that happen? You've heard things about, oh, it's, you know, 960,000 cubic yards of excavation, and that's 80,000 dump truck loads. Well, the answer is, they're not putting the dirt in a dump truck. They're hauling it up the hill and putting it onto the ski runs, and they have an excavation plan. But we need to see a lot of detail about impacts to the environmentally sensitive area up there. There's a drinking water protected area up on the hillside. Mine waste discussion. It's going to be quite a bit to knock that much dirt and rock out. And then where are they putting it all, and what impact does that have on where they're putting it? So we've got a lot of work. But the other piece is, now we're going to start into traffic.
And that's the next meeting, December 14th, traffic?
Yep. So I think you'll see us kind of go two directions. One is, keep working on kind of the mitigation of the scale and mass and excavation. And the other piece is, we'll start the beginnings of the traffic discussions, because I think that's got a long way to go. The traffic studies that were done before are out of date, both because our traffic situation's different than what it was years ago, and also they brought back a bigger plan than they had back years ago. So I think we'll kind of kick that off and get everybody up to speed, and then there's probably going to be a bunch of work required.
All right, quickly, and other business, any action with regard to the Kimball Garage special event?
We got very close to approving it last night. The conditional use is to allow event space on the kind of remodeled Kimball Arts Center. The only thing is, we had a couple of people come and speak out about concerns about noise, because all of a sudden the Kimball used to be an event center, but now all of a sudden you're putting a rooftop plaza up there where there's going to be, I think, more events going on. We were concerned about noise. We were concerned about things visible, since that's a landmark building, things like tents being on top of it. So I think we are really, really close. We just ask staff to work with the applicant and come back with some things to mitigate some of the impacts and make it less likely that we're going to have problems there.
So it's not an open rooftop event center, is it?
So it's
actually enclosed, isn't it?
It's indoors and outdoors. So what they've actually got is, they will... their proposal is to put on roughly half the roof, and part of it is kind of a part of the roof that's back towards the middle where it's less visible to anything around it. But the idea is to have a deck up there so that people can kind of mingle from inside in the event center to outside. But of course, that means anytime you start putting live music and things like that outside, we see that with the plazas and stuff around here. There's just concerns about putting that right next to a neighborhood. And it's allowed in the city. It's just we want to make sure that the right controls are in place so it doesn't become too big an issue.
So it will come back to you for final?
Yeah, I think we'll see that one at our next meeting, and that should go pretty smooth.
Okay, and any other big issues? There was a lot combination for the brew pub parking lot to make parking happen there?
Yeah, actually that one got continued. We didn't even look at it. Probably the most interesting other thing was when we didn't quite finish it out, it was literally just some wordsmithing that needs to be done in the terms and conditions kind of piece of the of our agreements. But the extension to the Goldner Hirsch into the parking lot that's up at the top, right kind of beside Stein's, that I think we're almost done with that one, and then they'll probably start construction up there.
Okay. Hey, anything else you want to mention?
Nope, I think we're good.
Okay. Steve Joyce, a member of the Park City Planning Commission. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
In the studio with details, I have Pamela Bell-Strauss with Valley Behavioral Health. On the phone with us, I have the guest speaker at next week's presentation, Stephen Wright. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Pamela, let's start with you. How is Valley Behavioral Health involved in all this?
So the school district and Valley are collaborating and putting together some lunch and learns for the school, for the parents in Park City to help them learn different things about drugs and alcohol. This one is about underage drinking, the one Steve is doing on Wednesday. And so we are collaborating and trying to educate our parents and help them figure out how to talk to their kids and how to prevent these things.
All right. Well, Stephen, tell us a little bit about yourself and about the organization you had started up, parentsempower.org.
Yeah, I represent parentsempower.org, which is the...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we
can. Sorry. Yes, I represent a program called parentsempower.org, and it's a statewide initiative in partnership with the Department of Alcohol Beverage Control and Utah Prevention. And its goal is to educate parents on the dangers and the new sciences behind the harmful effects of underage drinking, and then prepare parents to set these clear rules and expectations to keep their kids alcohol-free.
Okay, so what kind of presentation will you be making on next Wednesday?
You know, one of the things I aim to do is just share with parents up in Park City a little bit of the new science behind what actually happens to the teen's developing brain if they choose to consume alcohol. It's not what we thought it was, where, you know, it's this harmless rite of passage to have a couple of beers, you know, with your kids. But really, there are long-term potential dangers associated with underage drinking, and we just want parents to understand that. And if they do understand that, we hope that leads them down a road where they can engage with their kids in an appropriate conversation to set these clear rules and expectations that underage drinking will just not be accepted.
Right, but is it a cultural thing here? I mean, you know, there's folks in France, you know, still share a glass of wine with their younger children.
Absolutely, and we see that across our nation that people just don't clearly understand, you know, these long-term impactful dangers that their kids will face by experimenting with alcohol at a young age. If you think that you're keeping your kids safe by consuming alcohol with them, you're mistaken. You may be preventing drunk driving, but there are areas of the brain that are still going through rapid development at this young age, and we don't even see full brain development until the early or even mid-20s for these young children.
And how does alcohol impact, then, the developing brain?
So we know that during this time period, we see two major spikes in brain development in these young children. One, we see this as an infant, and we see it again during their mid-teen years. This is the time period that they're going through brain development areas for good judgment, learning ability, long-term memory. And these areas of the brain development are potentially damaged during the teen years if they begin early experimentation with alcohol. So at some level, if we never, ever dream of giving alcohol to an infant, we should have the same approach and understanding about giving alcohol to our teenagers.
Yeah, so with the name Parents Empowered, I mean, what are some of the ways that parents can empower themselves, or are we talking about parents empowering their teens?
You know, it's about empowering themselves with the knowledge and know-how on how to engage this conversation with their kids. And then one of the ultimate researches, data sets that we have collected here in Utah, is we found out the number one reason kids will choose not to drink is parental disapproval. And so as a state and as United Parents Against Underage Drinking, we want to establish that clear foundation to say this is just not acceptable. We are not going to allow our kids to subject their successful futures and health with early alcohol experimentation. And that's the empowerment piece, that we have empowered these parents with the knowledge and the understanding to be able to have these clear rules and expectations. And I believe these parents today, they are busy, and they are working harder than ever, and they have kids that are very smart. And they will ask the question, well, why? Why can I not have alcohol at a young age? And us as parents, we need to be armed with the information and the education and the know-how of what alcohol does to these young kids. And so it's no longer us just saying, no, you can't drink underage. It's the explanation of this is why you can't do it. And I think that goes a long ways in sustaining this relationship with kids in an effort to keep them alcohol-free, you know, clear through their teenage years.
Now, are you coming in just for this lunch and learn, or are you meeting with other groups as well while you're here in Park City?
I am open to meeting with other groups. We are actually in the midst of launching a larger prevention-based effort with Parents Empowered across Park City and Summit County. I think this will be the first of many opportunities we have to further share this new information and data about Parents Empowered. We've done programs in the past in Park City and worked with the mayor's office and the chief of police and even the county sheriff. And one of our good partners up there in Park City that we love to work with is the U.S. Ski Team, U.S. Snowboarding, and U.S. Free Skiing. And they've been big advocates and partners with Parents Empowered.
All right. Then people can find out more information. You do have that website, parentsempowered.org?
That's correct. Yeah, that website is a fantastic resource for parents to learn more about the issue and what they can do to help us solve this underage drinking epidemic we're facing.
All right. Pamela, noon's not a great time for working parents, especially if they don't work in town. Is this just something, a time that you wanted to try and see what kind of response you had?
Yes. That's something we wanted to try. We talked to a superintendent, and we are trying to do different things at different times to get to everyone. So there is a lot of parents that don't work or parents that do have a lunch break. And so they can come to this, and we are going to have other things in the evenings. And like Steve said, we are working together to have a campaign for Summit County. So we are going to have different media and different times and different things going on in the county to get to all of our parents.
Okay. Anything else either of you wanted to say about this?
No, just bring your lunch and come to the school district office on Wednesday, November 16th from 12 to 1, and here Steve put this great presentation together.
Okay, Pamela and Steve, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Porter. Well, the Youth Sports Alliance taking registration for its Get Out and Play elementary programs, as well as the Activate programs for middle school students. In the studio with me now, I have Heather Sims. She's the Youth Programs Director with Youth Sports Alliance, along with the senior sports manager at the Utah Olympic Park, Matt Twilliger, and Andy Jacobson, a coach at the Mine Bouldering Club. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Heather, what do people need to know about the Get Out and Play and Activate programs?
So registration is open for both programs. The Get Out and Play, as usual, is filling up fast. And registration actually increases next week for the winter for the snow and ice programs. So registrations to get the early bird discount need to be registered by the 18th. And the Activate program, registrations are ongoing. We currently have registration for the CPR award. And then on Monday, we're having opening up registration for our winter programs there. We have ice skating, social ice skating, cross country, and our friends at CrossFit PC are doing moves conditioning. So registration is available, and to go ahead and register, it's at ysaparkcity.org and under the youth programs.
All right. And how much does it cost to participate?
It really depends on the program. Every program has different costs, and it depends on transportation. And so it's every program is different.
Yeah, give us an overview. How many classes or how many programs you're offering this winter?
Oh, my goodness. Well, in January, I think we have 8 programs going at any one time. With the Get Out and Play, we have obviously ski and snowboarding. We have Nordic jumping, freestyle skiing, freestyle snowboarding. We have bouldering. We have ice skating. So, you know, between the two programs right now, we're trying to get kids off the couch and doing some fun activities.
All right. Matt, so what programs is the UOP offering specifically?
So we have the Nordic jumping, the free ride, skiing, and also the snowboarding. So we kind of have those traditional ski sports up there. Yep.
Yeah, and what are kids going to get out of it by participating?
Well, I think, first of all, like Heather said, just getting off the couch on a Friday afternoon when school gets out at noon, opposed to going home and sitting in front of the screen, they have this opportunity, low cost, to get introduced to some sports they may not have the chance to do at a low impact in terms of, you know, it's not a big cost to get in there. It's not a big time commitment. So, you know, getting exposed to Nordic jumping, getting exposed to some real basic free ride components. And then really, you know, I look at the park as a playground for kids on skis, you know, so they can kind of transfer over from doing the jump to the free ride. So it's a pretty unique environment and opportunity for kids.
Yeah. So would they just sign up for the Nordic or the free ride? I mean, they were all separate programs.
Yeah. Traditionally they sign up for one or the other, but it's not every once in a while, somebody might sneak over to the Nordic jump and take a little ride off of that, or kind of go over and, you know, hit a box on their way up to the Nordic jump. So, you know, it's really about creating a fun play environment for kids on skis. And again, giving them the opportunity to try something they may never have the opportunity to do at a very low commitment.
Yeah. In terms of equipment, that's all provided by you?
No, they do have to, and it's kind of nice because I think there's a progression. They do have to have a certain level of ski skills to come out to the park. So in that sense, they will own their own equipment. But the beauty is of Get Out and Play, if they don't have that ski skill, they get to go to the ski mountain. And I think that's where they start to get their introductory lesson. And then once they, you know, get their skill level to a certain point, then they can meander over to the park and you know, try the activities that we have.
Okay, and then Andy, the Mind Bouldering Gym got involved, what, about a year ago or so?
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Yeah. So what are they going to learn?
Well, we offer bouldering, which is just indoor rock climbing without the use of ropes. It's over the top of pads. And the kids definitely, they learn to face their fears. We align, I think, right in the line with the Youth Sports Alliance, where we're excited to get kids off the couch and just introduce them to an active lifestyle. And if this, like they spoke about before, is like, it's an easy, low commitment thing for them to try out. It's a 4-week program at the gym. It's 4 days, you know, 4 Fridays. And so it's not like a big commitment for the kids. So a lot of them will try it. And we're hoping that some percentage of them find the sport of rock climbing and pursue it throughout their lives.
Yeah. Do they just need to wear tennis shoes?
No, we provide the shoes. Mm-hmm. So we provide all the equipment they need. They just need to come in comfortable clothes.
All right, and it's both for the younger and the middle school.
Yeah,
students?
We do it for the Get Out and Play program, and for the Activate, which is the middle school program.
Yeah, is that the same with you, Matt? Do you have the younger and older grades?
Well, we actually do have the older kids. Heather organized. You know, if you've been to the park, we have our ropes courses, and we actually have a little what we call ninja course. So we've actually been able to offer some opportunities for the older kids to come up and try some not necessarily ski based activities, but some team building and that kind of thing.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes. We are currently collecting clothing for our scholarship students. As you know, the Youth Sports Alliance help many kids in the community. We have already registered 115 scholarship kids for the Get Out and Play program. And some of these kids need winter clothing, and winter clothing, ski clothing specifically. So if anybody has any old ski jackets or pants or layers, we'll be collecting those either at our office on Bonanza Drive, right above the Intermountain Healthcare, or all the elementary schools have boxes in the foyers of the school.
Okay.
So thank you.
All right. Heather, Matt, Andy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:56. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.